everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show. Tom, it looks like we might get about a third of an inch for this upcoming rain event. Won't be a lot, kind of, but anything would be good at this point.
Most of it Sunday, it appears.
Yeah.
We might get some more Monday, so those are the two good
I'm all
days
in.
To look
I'm,
forward
I'm
to.
All in for a Seattle-type gentle rain day on Sunday. It's the Buckmaster Show on this Friday, the 13th. It's September the 13th. We're on 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We've got five radio stations now under one roof here, all part of the Bustos, growing presence of Bustos Media here in town. For this particular show, the Buckmaster Show, will begin our 15th year of the radio program in January, and that will push us to the beginning of our 37th year in Tucson broadcasting. We have our worldwide live listening and all of the podcasts going back to the first week of January 2011 on my website, buckmastershow.com. We have that extensive archive of programs, very easy to access when we do our telephone interviews. And of course, people are always invited, listeners invited to call the live line, 790-2040. That is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Our media friends, we like to do a Friday shout out, Dylan Smith and the crew, TucsonSentinel.com. One of the crew, Paul Ingram, is with us today. Paul, we appreciate the support of you and the team. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. And of course, Dan Scheer and his group in Green Valley, the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun, also huge supporters of our work here. Our Friday focus interview today, returning to the program, we try to get the chief on every quarter. Tucson Police Chief Chad Kazmar joins us on the program. Hey, Chief, how are you?
Good, Bill, Paul, Tom, good to see you, Tucson. Good Friday afternoon. It's been a busy week.
It has been, and you guys were really kind of pushed to the limit, but the deconstruct of about 24 hours ago, you're very pleased.
I am. We started the week, of course, celebrating our 23rd anniversary of the 9/11 attack and not forgetting those who have fallen. And, you know, a lot of our young officers weren't alive when that happened.
Yeah.
So it's important we continue to remember. Isn't that weird to say?
Mm-hmm.
But we filled the TCC on September 11th with a community retired first responders and current first responders and donated some time and money to a good cause and to remember our fallen.
And then, of course, we had two very high-profile people in town yesterday. President Trump was in town, and the second gentleman. So that took a lot of resources.
It sure did. We had about 150 team members work in those two events, and can't be more proud of the team from the top to the bottom that made tomorrow or yesterday a success. The only problem we had was with the heat and folks waiting to get in line, you know, to see the President Trump were struggling with the heat, which is not unusual with other visits he's had around the state. So we got some water trucks out there that we have from the city and kept people hydrated before they could get in the show.
And there was a homicide reported yesterday.
We had a busy day in the field as well with, unfortunately, our 42nd homicide of the year of a young adult, 16 years age, very unfortunate on the south side. So we are asking the community of around 10:30, if anybody was in the area of Valencia and Oak Tree, if they saw any suspicious activity or did not report things that they saw related to that shooting, we'd like you to call us at the 911 or through the 88 crime and report what you saw.
Was it gang related or domestic?
It's too early to know that. No signs of domestic, but
okay.
or gangs, but just there was a firearm on scene and so we're investigating it. It doesn't look like the victim returned any kind of gunfire. So
right.
More to come on that maybe the
All
next
right.
show.
Let's bring Paul Ingram into the conversation. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you notice we were talking about earlier, we've now kind of gone above where we were last year on homicides, but where are we, and where was the peak of homicides in the last several years?
Yeah, we're one, you know, I'm disappointed to report that we're one ahead, and I wish, and I'd be disappointed, frankly, if I were to tell you that we were tied with 41 year to date. We talk about these numbers and data, and we forget there's people attached to these numbers, and families that are in mourning for a loss of a family member. We peaked in 21 with 86 homicides, and last year we had 58. So everyone matters, everyone counts, and we're always trying to prevent the next one from occurring.
Go ahead, Paul.
So, I mean, in part, like, what do you think in part has driven some of these homicides? I mean, what has caused these? Are they domestic? Are they over drugs or gangs or what's happening?
All the above, Paul. Great question. So, you know, we had, you know, preventable domestic violence murders last year. We also had preventable gang violence last year. We do have a gang problem here in Tucson. It's not like maybe we see on TV or folks hanging out on corners. It's a lot of it social media driven. A lot of it's driven around narcotics and just low level beefs of you know, looking at me the wrong way, that type of behavior. Mm-hmm. Most of the Tucson community is never impacted by a homicide because you're at home. They're not one of your loved ones. A lot of these do happen in the late evening, early morning hours, unlike yesterday, broad daylight, 10:30 in close to a residential neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how do you avoid these types of things? Well, if you, you know, I'll repeat, you know, and I sound like a little bit of a broken record to the listeners, but if you're not involved in selling drugs, you're not in a gang, you don't get involved in a road rage situation, you do have the decision, you know, the opportunity to go a different way. If somebody's acting crazy or wants to have conflict with you, you can choose not to. And you're home before midnight, your odds of being a victim of a homicide in this town are less than being struck by lightning.
And then we had that early morning incident where nearly 200 shots were fired. That was very troubling.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that at the next council meeting. Over 180 shots fired. Those individuals knew officers. They could see officers on a traffic stop. That's how brazen some of these individuals making bad decisions have become. Fully automatic guns. What we know is you don't fire those type of rounds without modifications to guns that are legal. And we're still in the midst of investigating of that situation. And I'm confident that our team will find the individuals responsible for that. But, you know, when we talk about gun crime in Tucson, we really dissect it to homicides at the top of that. Non-fatal gunshot, you know, where there's bullet piercings of human beings. We've created a new category that's not a federal requirement, but we want to track. That's how granular we want to get. And then our run-of-the-mill, hey, shots were fired. I called 911. I heard a bunch of shots. And then we respond. And there's no victim there, but somebody was clearly shooting a gun. And we collect all of the shell casings in all of those. In all of those types of incidents, really get a very different response, but a very intentional response where we try to connect up and better understand where these guns are being fired throughout our community.
Overview on your other crime statistics generally, pretty much where we were when we talked about a quarter ago, 3 months ago.
No, yeah.
Any big change?
No big changes.
What do you like? Any directions you like?
I, you know, the only one I like, I get beat up on, and it's fair of being beat up of property crime has stayed pretty flat the last 5 years. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is in a COVID, you know, post-COVID environment, the world changed and a lot of people work from home now, and the burglars know that. There's also speculation that those that low-level thefts are underreported because of a tax 911 system, and the fact that I do have some staffing struggles, and it takes some time to get out to those lower response calls, so people just get frustrated. You know, it's my call to action of we can't help your neighborhood, we can't help your business if we don't know the crime is occurring. And I know there's some frustration at times of how long it takes us to get out on the lower level calls, but it's important that they do call. And, you know, traffic fatalities is something I'm always paying attention to. So we had 61 year to date last year. We're sitting at 62 right now. The makeup has changed a little bit. We had this year, last year, we had 16 pedestrian deaths. This year we have 21, 5 last year for bicycle deaths, 6 this year. Motorcycles are the same at 15. And then 25 vehicular fatalities last year, and we're at 20 this year. I will make a correlation that the majority of our pedestrian fatalities have some type of connection to jaywalking and the individual being under the influence of fentanyl and or other narcotics.
Paul, what about bicycle fatalities? I mean, have you seen, how has that changed, and why those happen?
You know, as a cyclist, I was out riding this morning, I do pay attention to those. A lot of the bicycle fatalities we have are very similar behaviors to our pedestrian fatalities. They're making erratic lane changes. They're not using a crosswalk. They don't have lights or any kind of reflective materials on their body, and they're not wearing a helmet when they get hit. Mm-hmm. And there is a level of just drivers being distracted with cars now who have, you know, they're so deadened by sound. They have all this technology. And then, of course, their cell phones are in their hand half the time and people are distracted. So there is a component of speed and alcohol that's a contributing factor. So this is good for you to know in Tucson. you know, pay attention. There's no reason in today's world to get a DUI ever. We have Uber, we have Lyft, you have friends, you have all these different services. But if you are driving and somebody jaywalks in front of you at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning and you hit them, whether it's clear that it's your fault or not, you will be tested for any level of intoxication, including marijuana use or any other kind of drugs that could impact your ability to safely drive your vehicle. So even though it could not be your fault, you can still be subject to criminal and civil accountability.
And you going back to the property crime, you were saying you get beat up on that statistic. And what that's about is there is a group in town that believes that we're not seeing the whole picture here, that many people aren't even bothering to file a report. But you are urging, I would assume, Chief, if there's a problem, file a report, right?
Absolutely. So last year at this time, we were sitting at about 105,000 calls for service, and this year we're sitting at about 103,000. So not a huge difference, about 2%. But it's something we're paying attention to. I'm out in the community a lot, and I listen to everybody, and there's a lot of frustration with fair frustration in certain corridors. Fort Lowell and Oracle corridors right now are under extreme pressure from just the amount of unsheltered population and plight that comes with that. Trash, loitering, criminal damage, folks defecating on business, you know, porches, starting small fires, copper theft, all those things, you know, create an environment where people don't feel safe to go to, you know, conduct business at those locations. So those are, and it's not just that corridor, there's others. And it tends to be our denser populations or where the service is provided, you're going to have more of those types of issues. So on those one-on-ones, my divisional captains, leaders, all of the staff, the community service officers, the police officers out in the field, reconfirming and affirming to our community, hey, you know, yes, it's frustrating and we can't get here sometimes. But I think people understand, you know, if somebody's breaking into a building and it's occupied, most community understands that needs to be the priority over you know, some of the other issues that we've been discussing
and
prioritizing
response.
And
we talk every time you're on the show about staffing. Give us the current numbers, and you are below what we were before. Quite honestly, before the George Floyd incident, that was a watershed mark. Correct.
It really was. I mean, we were impacted like every other policing, you know, organization in the country. And there's 18,000 police departments in this country. We're one of 70 of the largest police departments in the country that serves, you know, the 33rd largest city in America. And it's difficult to do that with the level of resources that we have, which has caused us to expand our professional staff team members and really putting the right work in the right hands. So while we start the slow process of rebuilding the commission ranks, and we're very thankful that our senior folks are staying longer through drop extension programs, and that's making a huge difference, because what I always want to champion is when we have three team members that leave with, you know, 20 combined years of experience or 20 years of experience apiece, that's 60 plus years of combined experience just losing three team members. So when I bring brand new rookies out in the street that have 9 months of training, they don't have the toolbox and the experiences and the efficiencies that our senior team members do. So it's not a one-for-one when we're talking staffing numbers. It really doesn't quantify the amount of experience that gets lost. And for police, you know, what's interesting about policing in America, we train 5% of the time and we deploy 95% of the time, you know, but yet people want NFL and you know, SEAL team responses out of 21-year-old adults whose brains are not fully developed for the next 5 years with 9 months of training. So it takes time to build up the cadence and capacity to meet expectations.
But you do have, you're pleased with where you are with your total number of staff, including community resource officers.
You know, as a chief of police, you always want more, of course, right? Because I feel the pressure every day of the of the crime in the community, and I understand there's a component of resources that are required to manage that crime. I'm very pleased with the grittiness, the resilience, the capacity and commitment that our Tucson Police Department team members, again, from the top to the bottom, commission, professional staff have. And yesterday was, again, a great example of, you know, the calls to 911 don't stop coming in because we have dignitaries coming into town, and the team, you know, performed awesomely yesterday.
All right, let's take a break right here. We'll have more with Chief Kazmar and Paul Ingram here from TucsonSentinel.com. Take a break right here. Then we'll be back with segment two with the Tucson Police Chief, Chad Kazmar, and we'll talk with the chief about how law enforcement could be one of the big beneficiaries of this sales tax election that the city council has now declared will happen in March. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday edition. On Friday, we have a newsmaker come in, and we take a deep dive into a particular subject. The subject is law enforcement, and the newsmaker is the chief of police in the city of Tucson, Chad Kazmar. My guest co-media host today, Paul Ingram, is here from TucsonSentinel.com. The city council, by a unanimous vote, said there will be a special election in March for a half-cent sales tax. Mayor Romero on the program yesterday said the safe and vibrant city measure would generate about $800 million over the next 10 years. And the mayor indicated, Chief Kazmar, that you were very much on board with this because if approved, you and your colleagues would be beneficiaries of some money coming into in some areas that you really would like to beef up. Go ahead.
No, Bill, it's... I obviously just to educate the listeners, I can't advocate for it at this point, but I can't educate. And so, you know, we've been talking about crime and needs and the fact that we are up just under 20% for our gun crime this year of bullet piercing incidents of non-fatal shootings sitting at 122 when we had 101 year to date last year.
These guns are modified and they shoot a lot of bullets off.
They
right?
do. They're yeah, and that's something we work with our federal partners, and that ties into our public safety partnership and all of our evidence-based strategies. And I think the mayor did a really good job in conjunction with the city manager Tim Tamir of really tying into some of the critical feedback we received from Call to the Audience of this is not a standalone measure. This is in conjunction with all of the other efforts we've been making in evidence-based strategies and really our effort to attempt to put the right work in the right hands and meet community expectations. And so that's what it means for us. And I've certainly been on involved in the conversations from the ground level. And it would provide some critical infrastructure capacity to not only expand the staffing model to where I've been, you know, it's going to be 3 years in December that I've been chief here, and my number hasn't changed. 900, 300 is where I'd like to get us. 900 commission, 300 mix of community service officers and professional staff investigators.
That would be a bump of like...
Yeah, how many would that be above?
Yeah, it's a bump. All those. I don't want to commit to a hard number because
generally, kind of a percentage.
But generally, it's in between 40 and 60 officers, depending on where we're at by the time that measure would come into play. Mm-hmm. And then it would increase our total PSIs and CSOs are about 180 right now, so it's about mm-hmm. 120.
It'd be a sizable bump.
It'd be a sizable bump. And here's the thing, and you know, we didn't get to finish before our last break, but and it's not just George Floyd. It's a great resignation era. It's a changing landscape of employment, and a lot of people don't want to go to work. They want to work from home, and we're impacted by that. Our staff work in the field. And so when we have that pool of 300 of community service officers and PSIs, what that does is allows me to grow my own police officers. The job is so complex and there's so many expectations to meet that it gives me 3 years to build in that capacity before they get that 9 months of training.
Mm-hmm. How many of these community service officers actually become police officers? What's the rate?
Well, so it's normally been around, you know, between, you know, anywhere from 5 to 15%, depending on what class we have going on. We're in the midst of something we call P2P. So it's professional staff to police officer recruit. And this is the first program we built. We had 28 folks interested where we said, we're going to build a program designed just around this cadre of staff that gets you to the point where we can get you Arizona Post certified. And we had 28 team members that jumped in and said, I'm interested. And what it's really focused around is getting them physically and mentally and academically ready for all of the rigors of the academy and, mm-hmm. and the job. And so what we're really focused on is reducing the attrition rate. And we have the ability to do that because we're lucky. We have our own training facility in Southern Arizona that we share with Tucson Fire.
What are all some of the things that would come with the tax? I mean, what would some of the things that would come to your department?
The big things for me is fleet, for example. So it's in some aspects, it'd be an extension of what we went to the voters before with Prop 101. And, you know, what I liked about 101 was we were very clear to the voters on what we said we needed and what we would deliver. And even with radical inflation, nobody thought during 101 that a police car would go up 40% over 5 years. I mean, who saw mm-hmm. that coming? You know, mm-hmm. A police car now is almost $100,000, but much like 101, where we performed and we delivered, the safe and vibrant city measure would cover my fleet needs. It would cover some of the basic equipment needs of our marked and unmarked units. It would one huge cost is. With expansion of the city, we need a new building out near Houghton and I-10, something in that region to serve community where I could then restructure the entire city back to 5 divisions instead of 4 to balance that workload. And that's that'd be a combined shared facility like we're building on the south side. We'll be doing a groundbreaking on our Ward 5 team 1 build with fire department next week. So big, you know, that's a huge cost. That's a, you know, $30 to $40 million project cost. And we just mm-hmm. don't have those kind of dollars in the general fund.
This would bring the fleet, your vehicle fleet, up to where you want it. The Crown Vics then would be gone.
Well, Crown Vicks will hopefully largely be gone before we get here. But what it recognizes is that I have 50% of the city fleet, and I don't have general fund capacity that funds that. And that most folks don't understand that. My budget, about a $200 million budget, 95% of that's personnel cost. So just like your home, I still have, you know, paint to keep up and furniture to keep up and equipment to purchase and contractually required equipment like body armor and handguns and computers like you're using today, Bill, so the officers can be out there. And that technology, they're consumables. So the guns only last 5 years. Cars only last a certain amount of time. So this would put us on a good track for a replacement schedule. And because we have to remember, these vehicles, it's not just the fact that Kyle Lorenz lost his leg getting out of a Crown Victoria with inferior lighting to LED lit up Ford Pursuit SUV. It's and the same thing for Officer Buckner, who lost his life in a Crown Victoria as well. You know, those are calls to action that we can do better. Well, you know, we should always, not in a finger pointing, but when there's a critical incident and we lose a team member or somebody gets injured, we dissect that and go, hey, how could we prevent this in the future? And having cars that were stopped, you know, not having been produced since 2012 is not the best thing that we can do, and not the best tools that we can provide. And that does impact recruiting too. Mm-hmm. You know, when folks are watching, thinking, I don't know if I want my child driving a Crown Victoria. Mm-hmm. So this really, in conjunction with our expansion and our federal dollars and grants and some ARPA dollars, I think we're heading in the right direction. But we need to look, you know, this would be a decade-long sustainable tax for us where we could do some really great planning. But again, this is in conjunction with, you know, for us specifically at the police department, our evidence-based strategies that are out there we're deploying. This would help us scale technology. It would really be a lifesaver for the budget.
You know, speaking of something that you're bringing that's brought to the voters, I wanted to ask you about Proposition 314. You know, how would you think that it would affect, if it's put in, how would that affect what TBD does every day?
You know, it's hard to say, and again, we have rules on how much I can lean into.
Absolutely.
Ongoing propositions.
Sure.
What I would say is the difference from the conversations we're having now versus, you know, and I was involved with door-to-door campaigning on 101. The difference now is we had a lot of individual focuses of departments, and, you know, it's not just a catchy word to say a holistic approach. What we're recognizing is that the problems we're trying to solve in Tucson can't just be tackled by one or two departments, or even, frankly, the city. And you also heard that from me and from the mayor and from the city manager. We have to be good partners with the county. The county, you know, we have to recognize fentanyl is a health crisis. You know, that requires rethinking the way that, you know, what it looks like to book somebody in jail who's used fentanyl. It requires us in a post-conviction world to look at, you know, filling jails up isn't the solution, but we can leverage that arrest to folks who decline treatment out in the field. So that's what I like about some of these propositions moving forward, is I'm seeing more collaboration from the city and county, and I'm seeing more understanding that we have to tackle these complex issues from a lot of different angles, because it's what we're doing right now is just not working.
So one thing about Proposition 314 is there's the fentanyl part and there's the immigration part. Can you talk a little bit about how SB 1070, which is mostly gone, how does that still guide what TBD does in a given day?
That really, you know, that really hasn't changed in the last decade, even going back to Chief Villasenor, to Chief Magnus, and now to me, is, you know, we have federal requirements of when we have to do immigration notifications. Our stance hasn't changed. We're an immigrant welcoming community. And we don't have the capacity or desire to be any kind of arm of the federal immigration departments. Everybody has their lane that they work in, but we have these state, you know, requirements of checking in with each other. What I'll tell you is our border situation is a problem, you know, and I'm part of other organizations on other boards that address that. But when we can go an hour south of us, and the three of us right now can spread, you know, three strands of barbed wire, if it's not already cut down, and walk on to into a different country, that's a problem. And so, not getting into the semantics, if you need a 20, you know, 100-foot wall, but there's technology, there's resources, and the reality is right now, with the resources that our CBP and Border Patrol and Homeland Security have and where they're being placed, this community is directly impacted by the negative impact of that. Humans are being trafficked, drugs are being smuggled. 50% of the fentanyl of this country is still seized in the state of Arizona. Mm-hmm. And that, and the direct impact is what we see with the unsheltered population. People, it's so affordable sense on the pill that people don't want to get sober and they don't want free housing and they don't want some of these things that we're trying to get to them because they can continue to be high as much as they'd like to be.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's striking is how much of the fentanyl is picked up by CBP. It's coming through the ports, but there's so much of it that they'd have to scan and tear apart almost every car just to get at it, and that's really impossible considering the amount of vehicle traffic that goes through the ports at any given time. I mean, there's been a push for scanners, but that hasn't been fully funded yet and still coming.
Great points, Paul. And this, again, is, continued, commentary you'll hear from at least City of Tucson leadership, including myself, is this is a local, state, and federal problem, and right now is a difficult time to get even a local bodies of government working together. And then you have to get, state government, local government working together. And we had some challenges with even the opiate dollars, right? And some of our seized law enforcement dollars through RICO funds being, moved around in different spaces. And so I think we're going to be talking about that next week as well, our next mayor and council meeting. But we need the federal government to invest in those machines because we understand, we can't put most people understand you can't put a fence around our entire country, right?
Right.
And we need to use technology. But the other thing is there has to be, DEA, FBI, Homeland Security, there's a lot of work that's going on to impact the cartels and their ability to get drugs in our country. Supply and demand, you can have that argument. That's as complicated as gun control. The reality is, my solution is schools, education. We can't just focus on the symptom that we're looking at right now. We have to think generationally and think, how do we solve some of these problems in younger folks who haven't been impacted yet so we can really have legitimate solutions here?
Chief Kazmar is with us, the chief of the Tucson Police Department, Paul Ingram here from TucsonSentinel.com. Chief, I want to circle back quickly to the incident where nearly 200 shots were fired outside one of these hookah lounges, or the kind of a smoke lounge. There's about there's nearly a dozen of them with unlimited hours. Something's got to change there, wouldn't you agree?
Yes, sir. Councilmember Ulick has called this to the attention of Mayor and Council. We'll be speaking at it. I will be co-presenting with the city attorney's office, and we'll be asking for some changes. Our staffing model is just not built around an environment where we can have after-hour parties till the sun comes up. There's a reason that bars close at 2. It's time to go home at that time, because I have officers that go home around that time too, after we get bars to close.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing is just the world has changed. And again, when we have environments where folks are hanging out and drinking and conducting criminal activity and shooting, nearly 200 rounds where innocent people are getting shot, we have to ask ourselves, why are we allowing businesses like this to be open in Tucson? Doesn't represent the value systems, I think, of most Tucsonans. And we're going to try to do something about that next council meeting.
Body armor and cameras. The department is really one of the first in the country where every officer is fully equipped with the cameras.
They are, thanks to Mayor and Council vote back in October, really connected, and we tied it into our street racing. Again, where these are late hours, there's violence that are occurring, intersections are being taken over. It's some of the same demographic of folks in our community that are out there just to cause problems from, midnight till sunup. But we continue to scale technology in our Community Safety Awareness Response Center called CSARC. That's built within our Public Safety Communications Department. In fact, I'm heading over there as soon as I get off radio. Mm-hmm. But our technology, with support of community and council, we're scaling cameras. So that way we can create safe spaces. Yesterday, we had cameras throughout the city that we used to make sure that President Trump was safe and that Vice President's husband was safe. So it's just becoming smarter on how we use technology. It also feeds things like our Gun Intelligence Center, CGIC. You've heard me talk about that. I want to keep talking about that. And NIBIN, the National Integrated Ballistic Information Network, which is where we take shell casings and we input them into systems so we can correlate and connect guns to crimes just like human beings.
Any indication fentanyl use is declining?
Absolutely not.
No.
I am seeing it just flooded on the streets. I read resumes every day of the officers doing proactive arrests. And that's, a conversation that I continue to have with city leadership, county leadership, including the county attorney. And again, not a finger pointing, but let's evaluate, what our strategies are and how they're working. And let's collectively make some changes to where right now my officers can't drive. I get at least one complaint a week of your officer just drove by my business and somebody's smoking fentanyl. They didn't do anything. Well, the problem right now is if we go to arrest that individual who was smoking fentanyl, and meanwhile, that officer's more than likely in response to a priority call. But if they do stop and they do make that arrest right now, that we have to go take that person and get him medically cleared by a hospital before we can take him to jail. That's right, unacceptable. Right. That's not the sheriff's decision. That is the medical staff that's funded to be at the jail. That's a board of supervisors, Jan Lesher decision. And I have a great relationship with all of them, and we're having dialogue right now. But nobody in this room or listening today ever went to an urgent care or emergency center and went, wow, that was really fast. Not once ever have those words ever left anybody's
expect
mouth.
Expect 6 to 8 right? hours.
I mean, the sheriff's department did that in part because they had enough ODs of people who were recently received or in their facility that they were trying to mitigate that. But it sounds like it ends up tying up your officers for a while. Or does it mean the officers are maybe avoiding picking up people specifically just for fentanyl?
When you tell officers, we want you to go be tied up for 4 to 6 hours to make one arrest, you have effectively told the officer that arrest is not important to us. And again, I want to provide, Sheriff Nano some cover there. He made that decision because he wasn't being funded to have the appropriate medical staff to deal with fentanyl. Mm-hmm. And the county now has identified different funds to invest and restructure what that looks like. But it also deals with the thresholds that we have at the county attorney's office. And that gets into a more complex issue of that impacts, the county attorney by her staffing levels, which are impacted by pay. So there's all these complex things that we all have to work together mm-hmm. to figure out to where that we can actually leverage people in a continuum of accountability method, just like continuum of care, where they're making decisions in Tucson that are unacceptable and are impacting everybody around them. There's got to be better solutions.
We are out of time, but Charles Heller is on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Charles has a quick comment or question for you, Chief. So go ahead, Charles Heller.
Quick question, Chief Kazmar. Thanks for your leadership at the 911 challenge. I saw you going up and down the stairs with everybody else. That was cool. The question is, converting a machine gun, firearm to machine gun illegally is now a 15-year federal felony. Number one, has there been any effort at TPD to turn these cases over to the feds and get these people sentenced to 15 years who get caught doing it? And two, has there been any resistance from Ms. Conover's office to do that? I'll take my answer on the air. Thank you.
Charles, thanks for the questions. Thanks for coming to support the event. Absolutely. So through the Public Safety Partnership, which is a Department of Justice program, we do work with the county attorney and the attorney general and the U.S. Attorney's Office. And yes, we are in with that communication between our organizations and the ATF and FBI and DA and all these partners. What we do is when we have these felony cases, we evaluate where we can have the biggest impact. She does support that. Her team is instrumental in that. And again, it goes to capacity issue. So when we have a case where somebody's a repeat offender and might be looking at probation for yet another firearms violation or being a prohibited possessor, there is support for us to take a case that would get probation in our current Pima County Attorney judicial process system and move it over to the federal partners where we can get 10 to 15 years sentences in
All
prison.
Right. Chief, thank you very much. Always
thank
a
you,
pleasure.
Everybody.
And we'll see you in a few months on the program. All right. Segment 3 will be coming up. I'll have a few things to say with Paul Ingram from TucsonSentinel.com, but we're going to let the chief go. Buckmaster Show on a Friday continues right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on a Friday, and our thanks to the chief of the Tucson Police Department, Chief Kazmar, for being our Friday Focus interview. Paul Ingram is here, a reporter for the TucsonSentinel.com. And Paul, you had a, just like the chief and all his team, very busy day. You also were over covering the Trump event. Yeah. Downtown, and then the second gentleman.
Yes.
Mrs. Harris, Vice President Harris's husband was in town. So how'd you manage to cover both? You had about a few minutes in between?
We had a little bit of time, and the streetcar was actually a pretty good utility to kind of move around a little bit since traffic was a bit of a standstill there. They had us arrive early in the morning, about 7:30, to put our gear up, and then we had to wait as they cleared the room and you know made sure everything was set to go, which meant that they got a little bit of time to go out and talk to the crowd. The place that they held it at held roughly about 2,200 people. Mm-hmm. Obviously, some of that space wasn't filled because they can't. Some of it, of course, was a bunch of media. And then they had some areas. But basically, there were roughly about 2,000 people who got to see President Trump speak and campaign. There were some people who didn't get to get in. A lot of people standing out and outside in the heat. There were line went all the way around TCC, past the garage there. TFD told me that they had about 40 people who had some issues from heat, got too hot. I actually talked to some of the guys. They were running 8 calls at once for people who were just suffering heat. So they were actually running around giving people water and also carrying around those cold packs that you can break and kind of put on somebody and cool them off a little bit. So
it was at the Ronstadt Music Hall, and Linda mm-hmm. Ronstadt was very vocal, put out a news release saying she was not happy that Trump was there.
Yeah, she was upset that Trump was there. I mean, one of the things that she talked about was the family separations policy that the Trump administration did in 2019. You know, it was really controversial. It ran only for a few months because there's so much controversy around it. But, you know, that's one of those things that, you know, you do it and still years later, there's still fallout from it. I mean, there's still families separated. There's a couple of lawsuits. The Biden administration is still trying to put these families together. So it's a pretty big issue, and you could see how Linda Ronstadt would be upset about it. And, you know, the hall was named for her in 2022. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of her place now. So it has a, you know, picture of her up on the wall, you know. So I think she was upset by him coming and talking yesterday.
How about Trump was still talking, doubling down on the dogs and cats thing in Springfield, Ohio.
Yes, he definitely talked about the dogs and cats. I mean, he's really gone back to what has been one of the main threads of his campaigns. Mm-hmm. Has always been is that, you know, immigrants are coming to the country, and they are dangerous. They bring diseases, and they should be pushed away. You know, yesterday, to a lot of cheers, he said that he would create the largest deportation force in the ever seen, and really, you know, send people away. You know, it's not one of the things that's, of course, tough is, like, right now he's really focusing, of course, on Haitians, and he's also focusing on Venezuelans. He's talking about the Venezuelan gangs, you know, that are you know, have showed up in Colorado and a few other places. Which is sort of remarkable in part. I mean, that's probably one of the few sort of gangs that are now in the United States that weren't created in the United States. That one actually came from Venezuela, unless like MS-13, which is something that came from LA. So, you know, he really pushed on that rhetoric. He really landed on those. And he talked, of course, about the dogs and cats and the geese and other animals that people have supposedly eaten in Ohio.
They say back in Springfield, please, Mr. Trump, stop talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, today I think there was a couple of schools that were closed. There's especially schools that have lots of kids who happen to be Haitian. And also some city services were closed because of that. And, you know, you see, I mean, people really do, they hear these kinds of things and they really go into threats. They lance threats online. They make phone calls. They do bomb threats. They do shooting threats. And so, you know, for parents who are going to try to send their kids to school, you know, I mean, school shootings, we had one just early, you know, just recently, you know, school shootings, bombings, things like that. I mean, that's really scary as a parent. And, you know, to have that become because your kid, maybe your child is Haitian, because you're Haitian immigrants, you've been in the country under a legal process. You know, it's pretty important that the Haitians who are here are here under a legal process. There were some people who came across the border a couple of years ago, and there's been a couple of waves, but a large degree of them have come in the United States under a visa program, under a parole program, and are here and are seeking asylum. And if you look at what's happening in Haiti, I mean, they're actually pretty good, you know, qualifiers.
Anarchy in Haiti. Yep.
You got it.
Okay, before we let you go, Paul Ingram, how about the second gentleman's appearance?
Great event. Busy. They filled it up with about 450 people. It's really, really small venue, so it was really packed comparatively. There was a small group of protesters over what's happening in Gaza. You know, they've really gone and protested a lot of the democratic events and really wanted to make sure that their voice was heard too. And Imhoff really focused on abortion. That was his really the central issue to his to what he said and to that part of that campaign. They also had several other people who spoke, and it was really focused on abortion. And of course, Rahina Romero spoke, Adelita Grijalva spoke, and a few others. So it was a busy event. It ended up being a really busy day. We ran around a lot, you know, so lots of walking. I got my steps in, which is nice. And
what'd you get, 25,000 steps?
I was way over 10,000. After it goes over 10,000, I don't care anymore.
All right, Paul Ingram, thank you very much. And glad you're a part now of our team here on Friday. Thank you very much, Paul.
Appreciate that, Bill. Thank you.
TucsonSentinel.com is where you can find the work of Paul Ingram and Dylan Smith and all your colleagues. Your staff keeps growing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it has. It's been great to see.
Got some interns now turned into employees. And
yes.
So, yeah,
yes.
Good.
Yes, we're trying hard to do that.
Very good. All right, we'll take a break right here. Weekend Watch. Dan Gibson will be presenting that right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
2006. Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan, half-cent sales tax. They're both effective through June 30th, 2026. The region to receive continued funding for another 20 years. RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. Receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development. Visit rtanext.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Time to stir it up with Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. My, that Silver City forecast down to 49 degrees next week for the overnight low. So they're going to be looking at around 80 degrees, perfect time of year to go over and make that road trip to Silver City and Grant County, only about a three-hour drive. You can start your planning, and I hope you do, by visiting southwestnewmexico.org for more information about tons of stuff to do, a lot of outdoor activities. Let's go now on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Dan Gibson with Weekend Watch. Dan, how are you today?
I'm good. Looking forward to the Silver City Community Film Festival.
Wow.
Mark your calendars. October 18th through 20th, screenings all through the area of Silver City. They'll be collecting films from all over the area. So it's for Silver City by the area of Silver City, Grant County, Lawrenceburg, et cetera, submitting their films. The deadline was September 1st, so you missed your opportunity to do your film. But you can still go see them October 18th through 20th.
You know, for a small town, they have a lot of activities going on. And I know a lot of people like to go over there for all the music venues that they have. Every weekend, there's something going on.
Oh, yeah. If you go to visitsilvercity.org, their calendar has a lot of options. You can find basically, I mean, anytime you're there, you can find something to do between bands at the Little Toad. There's trivia. They've got, you know, they've got something happening. All the Whiskey Creek has a lot of live music as well.
Yep.
So, yeah, if you haven't been to Silver City, it is a lovely town with lots and lots to do.
How about some things to do here in our town?
Oh, yeah, that's also true. Also true. Yes. Invisible Theater is having a little bit of a rebirth. A new creative director, Susan Clausen, is retired, who founded the Invisible Theater, and they're revamping their whole schedule and kind of turning over a new leaf after the incredible direction of Susan Clausen. They have a show happening tonight and shows coming up through all the way through the 15th called Birds of North America, a play by Anna Uyang Mensch, which is about a father and a daughter, their relationship, but also understanding each other through birding. So birding's hot, plays are cool. Go check that out at the Invisible Theater on North First Avenue this weekend.
So there's always something to do theater-wise, but how about maybe eating-wise?
Well, yeah, sure. We got that, too. Does drinking count? Drinking counts,
drinking
right?
Drinking-wise.
Dragoon is having their annual Oktoberfest. They're calling it Goonfest. That's happening today starting at 3 p.m. So, I mean, probably just get in the car and head over there. Probably get in line.
Right after the show. Get in line.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, exactly. They'll be celebrating their Oktoberfest-style Marzen called Goonfest. The Tucson Symphony Orchestra's Monsoon Brass Band will be playing. Also, Tucson's famous food truck, the House of Brats, will be serving up Oktoberfest staples. They're having a special. If you purchase one of their steins, you will get the first pour included. That'll be $13 total. Also, you probably have this in your car, Bill. They're having a Lederhosen contest. So best dress gets a special prize.
All right. Dan Gibson, always a pleasure. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Dan Gibson with Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And as Dan points out, there's always something going on the weekend, not only here in Tucson, but over in Silver City, that makes your three-hour drive certainly worthwhile. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. The original theme music composed by my German friend, Christophon. Thanks to assistant Rosemary Brandt, making sure all the podcasts are posted at buckmastershow.com in a timely manner. And of course, Tom Fairbanks across the aisle from me on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing. Have a great weekend.